What's up? What's up? What's up, guys? Check, 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 check. Meow. It's your local hood hippie extraordinaire coming in at your life. How are you? Okay, good. So, basically, what you're going to be jumping into on this episode of the Psycho Knots Mirror is a day at the Grow trimming some beautiful wizard cannabis. I will be hanging out with, you can actually find them on Instagram, Toklahoma Tim. He is actually joined in on this conversation out there hanging out at the Hermetic Flower Company, in the trim room, trimming it up with us. He got to come and start his year off fucking right, y'all. He got to come start it off at the Grow. Kind of like all of us, you know, just walking into fucking straight magic. So he came and spent the day with us, cause he'll be working out there soon. So, Toklahoma Tim is on this, episode, and DV Sprocket is also DV_Sprocket is also on this episode with me. And then we have, Bailey. She is on this episode. Now, Bailey's pretty wise, so she don't talk a lot, at all, if any, on this episode. But she's in there kicking it, getting her trim on. She's fucking badass. She's a great trimmer. I really enjoy spending time with her. And then we have Braden. And he is also an awesome trimmer. He does a great job making that crafty cannabis look so nice. You'll get to hang out with us, sit with us for a little bit while we trim and bullshit and talk about all the amazing cannabis that the Hermetic Flower Company lets us try. I mean, come on, guys. It's called a dream that I'm living in a reality. I woke up. That's all it is. Stepping into who I am. So now I get to be around some of the coolest motherfuckers that there are. I'm so fucking grateful. So fucking blessed. To learn new stuff every day. I did a fast. Starting on this day that we started recording. This is from Tuesday of this week. It's great, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to stop going on these little tangents. Let's jump in to a day in the life of mystery school for your girlhood hippie. Thank you for joining me on the Psychonauts Mirror.
Recording everybody. Do I have everybody's consent to record?
Absolutely.
Si, senorita.
Do I have your consent?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Probably won't say much though. It's okay.
Perfect. Whatever you want to do.
That means you're the wisest.
Yeah. Observe.
Don't tell her that.
Observe.
I'll try to get you later, man.
Smoking the bonbons.
Yeah, how do y'all like it?
It's definitely got that spicy taste on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish I would have gotten to seen it.
Yeah.
Like this grape haze of spades is nice to look at.
I think wizard shit's really good, but probably that black cherry jelly is hard to beat.
It was good.
Oh, no, I didn't have the black cherry jelly.
Cherry
thin mints.
I've never had the cherry thin mints, but if he's got any of that black cherry jelly around, she's telling me you want to try that shit.
Hell yeah.
It looks like it's got snow on it, dude.
I got to smoke a joint of it last time I was down here helping trim out. Yeah. But I didn't, like, you know, get a go buy a bag or anything like I just
right.
Get to really experience it out of my own piece. And so what, are you guys like smoking like bowls, joints?
I'm a bong guy. I carry my bong around like a binky.
Okay, hell yeah.
I like joints.
Nice. That's the way my wife is.
I prefer blunts.
Okay. I like a good blunt every now and again.
That's all she's.
But I use hemp wraps, not tobacco, if that makes a difference.
That does make a difference.
I'm down with that. I don't know how to roll very well, so if it requires rolling.
I can teach you how to roll, bro.
Man, they've been trying to teach me my whole life. <Here's something laughs>
I don't know how to roll them either. I go by pre-roll.
I used to use that.
Oh, I'm so horrible.
I lost it, or the rubber stretched out or something, but I used to have one of those, like, zigzag makes them. It's like a piece of plastic you put everything in. That's what I used to roll my joints with.
I can stuff them in town.
I can show you how to use a dollar bill, bro.
I know that trick, actually. Just something happens when it comes time to smoke weed. And a bong appears in my hand. And
I like bong would be probably about my favorite piece to smoke out of.
Nice. Actually, surprisingly, my actual favorite thing is a glass one-hitter. Keep it clean every time, and you get a green hit almost every time. It kind of looks like a crack pipe or whatever, but I mean, it's, you know, those little glass one here. But man, I love those things.
I got you.
That way you can get the ultimate taste, and especially if you're conserving, like, oh man, I gotta have this last me. You know, this eighth has to last me a week. I usually smoke that in a couple days or whatever. Okay, that little one hitter will come through.
I don't usually conserve. I'm on the black market still, to be honest with you.
Yeah. When I got my license, I went to somebody and got some because it was definitely better than what was at the dispensaries at the
time.
Look,
when this is on the market, I buy this, but I got a buddy and that sells me quarter pounds for $500 of high mid, and I can't afford to smoke that in the dispensary.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I'm a budget shopper, guys. Like, that's why I'm telling you, like, these places like Green Roots or Great Barrier Reefer, I refuse, because you can get the same thing at the place right down the road and save yourself $20, or I'm shopping around, and my first time discount. Oh, cool, I wanted to try this grower out, but I'm not going to pay $50 for that. I'll use my first time discount, come out maybe paying $40.
Yeah. You can definitely do that. I got kind of bored of it, and I got burned a couple times on some $99 ounces and shit, and I was
Man, I would never, you know, like, yeah.
Same kind of, you know, in the beginning, I thought I'll give it a try, but then I was like, fuck this.
I never bought one of those $99 ounces.
But, I mean, this shit, it's a friend of mine. I've known him for years. He's doing his shit in states that it's not legal in. I'm not cutting into anybody's business here, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the deal. And he knows that I don't want to buy from him. You know, we've always that's why I call him. I was like, hey, dude, I don't want to be doing this, but I only make so much money, and this shit's fucking expensive. So.
My wife's aunt, she got her car just to be legal, and she smokes Reggie. She's all about it. She don't want to smoke she wants to smoke the good stuff, but she doesn't want to pay for it. Call it how you want, but she. Yeah. Still goes and gets Reggie, and she loves it. And
that's how my mom is.
It's crazy, you know. But I mean, that's smart though. Like, you pay $100, and you can still go get your Reggie. You know, like
I don't even know where the hell you gotta get it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
like the old brick.
It's old schoolers.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I don't know where you're gonna find that Mexican brick weed. Right?
No,
you can still get Reggie.
Yeah,
old school. Okay. I gotta just find an old schooler.
I forgot you were recording. Thanks for the eyeballs.
It's a podcast.
I was like, why is she rewind? Why is she acting like that? I was like, I start looking up at these cameras and the government's watching or something. So Bon Bon is really good.
Yeah.
Nobody say my name or address, please.
All right, Jake from State Farm.
It's not really the Rogers discount. Everybody gets it. Funny. No, but I mean, that's real talk. The medicine that we require is not priced at an accessible rate right now in our market.
Yeah.
You
that's something that these guys are
changing. These guys, I love that.
100%.
I've heard these guys, you know, and for those that don't know, we're trimming for a hermetic flower company right now. These guys have talked about that a bunch of times, that their goal is to set market prices at an affordable rate.
They already have set standards.
Yeah.
With their hash drop they just did,
mm-hmm.
it sold out in 18 minutes.
At two different shops in 18 minutes.
Yes.
And the other shop took an hour because it took longer to get there. You know, and so I went into the shop 23 hours after the drop and I knew there would be no chance, but still asked for it, you know? But that, and so these guys are craft cannabis guys that are trying to get quality medicines into everybody's hands.
And that, yeah, absolutely.
You know? And I fucking stand by their product.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm smoking on their product as we speak.
And it's amazing.
Got me high enough I forgot we were recording.
Hey, you know what? That's why I had to get everyone's consent. Because I knew smoking you would forget you were doing this.
No, I'm totally okay with
it. I think that's what make it.
If I said anybody's name in there, which I don't think I do, please edit it.
Yeah.
No. Little card war, you know?
Wiki. Little slide over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I'll listen to it a million times before I post it.
There we go. I mean, that's how it was before we could buy it here in the state. That's what I used to do, is go to Colorado, and I would buy it out there.
Well, I think that's what Oklahoma fucking finally realized.
Yeah.
Enough people
yes.
were getting busted for what they were doing that Oklahoma was kind of like, okay, well, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
figure it out, but still having a rough time because some people are still stuck.
And even now that it's legal, when I'm in Colorado, I buy weed because it's cheaper. You know?
Yeah.
It's cheaper to buy it there and bring it home. And it took me about 4 hours of studying the map, but I found a highway where you can cross directly from being a tourist in Colorado to a legal marijuana card holder in Oklahoma in about 2 seconds. I think it's federally against the law for that 2 seconds.
Yeah,
but you're okay on either side.
2 seconds.
Like what, isn't that like
portal? You
know, yeah, that's crazy.
Isn't that insane? 2 seconds is the difference between an imaginary line
an imaginary fucking line.
Is it like a 2 Mississippi seconds or like 1?
What are we looking at?
Yeah. How wide is an actual state line?
How many seconds is a state line?
Can we
have that measured?
Is that like a real quick 1-2 or like a 1 Mississippi?
Can we call it 1 Mississippi?
From Wheeler, it's like 30 yards.
30 yards?
And the one going from Elk City to Wheeler is about 30 yards.
So these measurements actually do exist. I just need to do the research to find
them.
No,
that's just like the distance between two signs. So I'm just thinking.
Oh,
is there?
I see.
Is it going to be like as thin as a piece of paper? Are they going to put it real cut and dry, like a line right here?
So
like a line in the sand? How are they going to do that?
If you live in the town of Bethany and you're one of the brainwashed Bethanyan Knights,
yes, you know,
which is, I'm not a fan of Bethany, their cops are horrible,
mm-hmm.
but they have this small town mentality about them, and one of the things you'll notice is every time you're leaving Bethany, there's about a 2-foot-wide blue stripe painted on the ground. That's to notify Bethany residents that after they cross that line, Oklahoma City gets their tax dollars instead of Bethany. Like, real life, that's why that blue line's there. So that if you want to keep Bethany a town, because Oklahoma has almost absorbed Bethany and the village multiple times, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So if you want to keep your small town Bethany a city, then you keep your tax dollars in Bethany by abiding by those blue lines. City of the village is even crazier. You go in their city office, there's this big sign that says sponsored by, and there's about fucking 50 corporations.
Well, you've seen the War Acres sign that says, War Acres, you know, obviously it's a corporation.
Oh, yeah.
It says, like, War Acres Corporation. You know,
I haven't seen that one.
Incorporated since, like, 1958. And you're like, wow, like, they just flat out say that, hello, we're a corporation over here, you know, give me your money.
At least they're honest about it, you know?
I mean, it's literally, look it up, and next time it'll say War Acres Incorporated, something like that, but it's definitely there.
Walmart pretty much owns the village because I remember when this happened.
Oh, you guys been smoking in here?
No, never. Hey, we're recording, just so you know.
We're podcasting right now.
Oh, okay. Quick question, or random thing. At 12, I didn't know what time it was for you guys, if you wanted for lunch, whatever. So,
okay.
Just reminding me. At 12.
Very cool.
Yep.
Now, what is that, 30, 45 minutes?
An hour.
Okay.
An hour. Yeah.
Where's
awesome. Right. It's like 11:50,
it's
almost time. Yep. Okay. That time, so I wanted to remind y'all before we started like getting into the soil, and it's like 12:30. Or something.
Very cool.
Yep.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
I got to go to some really cool meetings with the Cannabis League when it was first starting to be legal. And we were so before the vote, everybody was really excited and really motivated to do a whole bunch of shit. And I was joining all these leagues and all these different groups of people, and we were gonna do things like come up with a list of doctors that would give evaluations to veterans in need, because you can't get them through the VA, and we were going to try to help homeless people get it. And then it was like, the second it got passed in the vote and you could get a card, man, 85% of the people that were helping with that shit went, just vanished. Oh, we can smoke now. Now, I'm not saying that the actual Cannabis League did that, because I never heard anything else from them. So, they could have been meeting and I just wasn't on the call list. That's very possible. I am not the end-all, be-all by any means. It was weird, man, how many people quit. You know? I was so motivated.
Yeah?
Yeah, I went to one of those little, like, online schools to become a bud tender. And I hate that fucking term, bud tender.
Yeah.
Medical provider.
Makes it sound like you're going to the bar.
Yeah.
You know? And this ain't like alcohol for me anyway.
Sure.
Nope. Pick your poison. That was not a poison that I wanted as a
definitely
alcohol poison. No thank you.
I guess maybe it's possible, but I have never blacked out on marijuana.
I've taken too big of a ball grip before and been like, okay, it's time to just lay down.
Yeah, okay, I've had to lay down before. I'm going like, to take a nap.
I'm just going to go ahead and go night-night.
But I've never blacked out, gotten in my car, and driven across town.
Yeah, you know? I don't think I've ever done that. Yeah. I've definitely
like
been
ambient driving or whatever it is.
I've done that on alcohol, you know?
Yeah, I don't even remember going home. But I ended up at home.
I always tell people I'm allergic to alcohol. I break out in handcuffs.
Same. That's what drove me to handcuffs. Alcohol.
Weed drove me in handcuffs.
Ooh.
Yeah, isn't that messed up?
No, I got a weed charge when I was 17. I technically never graduated high school. I got a GED. But my official charge was possession of a CDS with intent to distribute to minors in a school zone.
Yeah.
I should technically still be in prison. Luckily, I had a good attorney and a lenient judge, and I never had to go anywhere.
Damn.
I had to do a bunch of community service, go to rehab, and pay a bunch of money. They gave me a deferred adjudication, which meant they gave me the punishment of a 17-year-old, but if I screwed up, they were going to take me to adult court on a crime I already pled guilty to.
Wow.
So it was like, you get one shot, and I definitely took my shot and ran with it.
Good.
Stayed sober for like 3.5 years that time.
That's awesome.
Man, staying out of prison can be a hell of a motivator.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that now, being as old as I am now, and having done all the things I've done in life, what just getting out of a jail cell for the first time would feel like. I would feel so left behind. You know? Like we were talking about earlier, so much has happened in technology in the last few years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
gas station. My gas light came on all the way here. I don't think I'm gonna eat at that gas station across the street anymore, man. I've had tummy aches both times I've eaten there.
The one that has the corn dog?
No, the other one.
The one across the highway?
Yeah.
Oh.
I had that hamburger type thing there that day, uh-huh. And then that up the next morning I got a breakfast burrito there that I ate for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't agree with me either, and I usually love breakfast burritos. But one, that was not a burrito. That was more like a quesadilla. Like, they rolled it in a tortilla, but then they squished it with the grill for some reason. And it was like a square breakfast egg sandwich thing. Not a burrito.
Not a burrito. Not what you were wanting.
No. I should have known when they charged me $5 that they didn't know how to make a burrito. If you're paying more than $3 for a taco or a burrito, that white person doesn't know what they're doing. It's just a rule of thumb.
Roll of thumb.
If you're at a taco truck and you're not the only one there that speaks English, go to a different truck.
When I worked at Amazon, I went to the taco truck almost daily. It was my favorite.
I'm such a taco truck fanato that when I was in the military, whatever base I was stationed on, I would find out who the taco truck that operated there was and get their business card, and I would call them out to the ranges instead of eating MREs.
Nice.
They'd be like, we're going to go out to the field today and only eat MREs and shoot weapons. I'd be like, bet. Hey, El Burrito number 2, we're going to be at range 59. I'm going to need you to show up around 11. I'm telling everyone to bring cash.
I'm working at this job downtown right now. It's the 10-story hotel we're building downtown. And, yeah, every day at, like, 10:58, you hear the little the horn go off. People crowd up, man. Like, mm-hmm. It's good.
For sure. When I used to work in the body shop, they would pull in and honk once a week at, like, 11. You'd walk down there and go get you a burrito.
Hell yeah.
Gut trip, that's what we always call it. They told us we weren't going to be able to do that when we got to Iraq, but they were wrong. The Iraqis got gut trips too. You just gotta have enough money. I'm out of stuff. I think it's lunchtime.
Yeah, it is lunchtime.
I need some water, man. That pepper is hot on the back of my throat after two of them.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It was tolerable.
Y'all are so brave.
The first one was tolerable. This one, I feel like choking just talking.
One was enough for me. I guess my tolerance is not as built up as y'all's. Y'all were champs through that whole entire 2 session.
You want me to get you there, Holly?
I don't know, brother. I don't know. Y'all are some cheap motherfuckers.
Hey, you need these to throw them in? Is that what you're after?
Alrighty, so today is Friday. I already told you that. I don't know what voice that was. But it came through. And I recorded a little bit today. Today, we have been blessed with Oklahoma Cloud Culture. He sat in with us today and trimmed some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful flower, some mastermind. And let me tell you, it is fucking beautiful. It smells great. And it's just... it's with the shit. Mastermind is with the shit. I have to say it's a really good trim and it's sticky, icky, icky, icky. Love it. So we just hung out again with DV_Sprocket on Instagram. And Brayden, I don't think he has any platform, or if he does, he says he doesn't use it much. So this was just another day in the life of a mystery school, just some conversation that goes on and, you know, deeper dives into different realities than maybe ones you've been in before.
Or maybe the way you are looking at things in life, or something that resonates with you and it just speaks to you. So good conversation happens out here. It's always like, it always helps build me up, even when you don't even realize the conversation does that. It's always good to stay teachable and have an open mind and an open heart to learn. And I just want to thank you guys for being here and experiencing this timeline with me. It's fucking beautiful. So you're coming into the second part, which is on a Friday today. Yeah, so you're coming to hang out with me, Oklahoma Cloud Culture on Instagram, and DB underscore Sprocket, Brayden, and your local hood hippie extraordinaire. I'm Holly Smalls on Instagram, by the way. I'm not Psychonaut Mirror or Hood Hippie, but I am Holly Smalls on Instagram. So if you want to follow that page, I offer some love and support for you there for your growth through this the shift in the timelines. So I just want to thank you guys for coming and hanging out. We're doing a get-together for the Psychedelic Society. So if you listen to this podcast today on Friday, January 8th, then you will hear that we are having an event. We're meeting at Bass Pro Shop downtown in Bricktown, and then going to go to the underground tunnels and just kind of explore the below. As above, so below. So come and hang out. Namaste Mofo is going to be there hanging out also. I'm pretty sure Destiny I Am will be there, from what I have been told. Crossing my fingers, I would be so thrilled to see her and spend some time with her also. So you guys, come on out, hang out with us, and enjoy the second part of the Hermetic Flower Company and the mystery school that I get to be in. Love you guys.
You need some alcohol wipes. Shouldn't be digging that long. You know that kind of shit.
For sure.
I can give a mean IV. Certified combat lifesaver. Don't mean shit other than I can give you an IV. Maybe a tourniquet. It used to mean we could do CPR, but then they told us that that was against the rules. Can't do CPR anymore. They don't want you. Once you start CPR, you're not supposed to stop till either they're put on a machine or they're resuscitated. And so, like, it's a really bad idea to start that in the middle of a combat situation. So they removed it from the list of duties. They just were like, bet, we just won't do that anymore.
So what book were y'all talking about earlier that y'all were both reading or both read? You two? Jacob and Kevin? What book was that?
Initiation into Hermetics.
Oh, okay. And you said you're still reading it? Like,
yes.
I've taken a break, but it's a heavy book. I read it for 6 months before I took a break. Like,
so it's like really long.
It's a little under 300 pages or around that.
Oh.
Maybe. It's not that it's really long as much as just, it's not something, a lot of the information is stuff that you're supposed to put into practice or do exercises with. And so it's not really something that you just sit down and read from end to end and just think about, if that makes sense.
In the first part, it's written in parts. There's part one and part two, and part two is a practice section. And like you said, you really, and it gives you instructions in it too. It's like, do this, and until you mastered this, don't do this. Mm-hmm. And then do this, and until you've done this, don't do this, you know?
And the whole point in these practices and daily things are for what?
Self-initiation.
Yeah, I mean a variety of things right there. So it might be something like spending time writing down your character flaws and defects and, you know, something like that, things you want to change about yourself. Or it might be like some meditative style, like exercises where you're, you know, thinking about specific things or putting intention behind, you know, specific things. So it really is just a kind of wide range of things. It, even though it is heavy, it's supposed to be, it's allegedly an introduction. So it's kind of glancing over a lot of things that are considered, you know, hermetic.
Yeah. It's like alchemy for the mind, body, and soul, pretty much.
Absolutely.
It's a different philosophy, you know. There's a, and, man, it's kind of the, I can't think of his name right now, Francis something that wrote the book.
Yeah.
Franz something. But he's got a pretty interesting life. So, like, as a child, he was in a concentration camp under Hitler Germany, you know, the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And then he gets out of there and at 13 becomes, from all accounts that I've read, the term usually used is possessed or obsessed with hermetics at age 13. And he wrote, I think he wrote 3 books total.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's 3 books total. The one we're reading is the first book. And so he started writing these books, and towards the end of his life, he ended up in a communist conversion camp, and that's where he died. And I don't think he even made it into his 40s. And so, like, man, dude was real, real, like, if you're of the idea that pain brings around spiritual awareness, this dude had no pleasure in his life.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
And I can only imagine the fever for which you would chase after a spiritual practice once you've been released from a place like Auschwitz or anywhere that you might not live, you know?
Mm-hmm. So how would you say it's helped or affected your daily life here in the now?
It allows me to be the observer better. In your terms, it's positioned up the observer.
Ah.
It allows me to. So it's like universal principles. And the way I view it is once you understand these universal principles, and I'm not saying I have a full understanding right now, I have a pretty idea. Just a surfing, like he said, this book is an initiation, it's an introduction. But once you kind of understand those rules, you can't help but see how they're in everything. Religious practices, occult practices, government, church, I mean everything. These kind of, they're just there, they exist, you can't argue with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could, but I wouldn't spend my time arguing with you.
Right.
And then so, like, knowing that, it allows me to take the emotion out of things and use my logical brain to analyze things.
Mm.
At least that's what it does for me.
Jacob, what about you?
I agree a lot with what Kevin said. You know, it's the next step on the path for me. You know, it's not all of it is necessarily new information because, you know, I've read a lot from just whether it's hermetic stuff or from other religions.
Mm-hmm.
And like Kevin said, like a lot of religions pull from hermetic philosophies. And again, to his point, you find it everywhere, right? Like that, what I was describing earlier, where you're writing down character defects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's literally part of the 12 steps of recovery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like the fourth step in recovery is one of the most crucial parts of the 12 steps.
That was my
recovery.
First experience. I had no idea it was hermetics or what was going on, but that was my first experience with going through an initiation or hermetics was the 12 steps recovery.
And so I find with hermetics, what I feel like I am studying and researching is like, you know, it's a universal philosophy that a lot of other philosophies have taken from, and I'm able to study it without a lot of the extra dogma that may be attached to it from different religions.
Yeah.
And so as far as like what changing my day-to-day life, probably the like just the meditative exercises that are in the book, I really enjoy those, but I meditate a lot, so it's kind of natural that that's what I gravitate towards.
That's great.
How'd you find Hermetics, Jacob?
Honestly, Alex, really. It wasn't, you know, I have a brother that's older than me, so he had like tried to introduce me to stuff over the years and got me onto like Manly P. Hall, and I listened to a little bit of Manly P. Hall, but
I like Manly P. Hall, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't read any of his stuff and wasn't into him as heavy as now, so it really wasn't until like me and Alex got to talking, and he just, you know, handed me a copy of the Kybalion one day, and I was like, here, man, just read this, see what you think. And again, it resonated with me because I'm like, I grew up going to church, you know, Seventh-day Adventist in Moore, Oklahoma. I'm going to church every week. Mm. After that, I was Catholic for a little bit because my dad started trying to be Catholic. And then, like, you go on your own whole journey. So it was really just, like, coming back to it without all the extra shit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I got divorced, I made a commitment to myself that I was never going to live life like that again. I was never going to have that again. And I knew that the only thing from counseling and 12-step recovery and things like that, that the only thing I could do about that was change who I was. And so I set about to figure out ways to do that. And my friend Ashley was inviting me to these classes at this spirit school. And I was going to the spirit fair. And I was getting into doing some guided meditation. And I'd been doing meditation for a little while because it really helped with my anger problems. You know, a lot of my PTSD resonated as anger. And I was really loud. You know, I didn't get violent with people, but I like to get real loud and smash things, which is unacceptable behavior. Right. So meditation really helped with that. Once I got into spiritual practices and doing guided meditations, I felt I didn't know about programming or unprogramming or anything, but I felt this overwhelming pressure from nobody but myself to pick a path. And so I started looking into things, and I've always kind of, I'm a Eastern philosophy kind of dude. And so, like, I struggle with Hermetics a lot. Like, I have a love and a passion for it, but there's a lot of it that's really hard for me to process, because Hermetics is kind of the basis of Western mysticism and Western occultism. Like, most of Western practices are based off Hermetic philosophies. But, and so I'm really into the Eastern mindset, and so I started looking into these things. And I don't know if it's my signs in me or the way I'm raised or what, but when I start getting into something, I want to go back as far as I can go. And as far as you can find written history, you usually wind up in Egypt.
Right.
And that's where you come across this dude named Thoth that I became obsessed with. And if you study that for a little bit, you figure out real quick that he's really four or five different people. And as you start reading through literature, that's how I discovered the Kybalion. And then I went on to read the other things that Hermes Trismegistus had written before I started getting into this stuff. And so, like, I've really, really versed in the history and the text from which everything is written, but such a baby, toddler almost, in practice. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's hard to answer that question on how it helps my life on the day-to-day, but absolutely how it's changed my life completely. I recognize things and patterns faster. I'm able to adjust more and handle what comes at life without that panic and crisis. Not always, because I'm new to it, but sometimes I can see things coming, and I don't want to use the term avoid, but take a glancing blow instead of a, this is going to wipe out my whole fucking world, you know?
Yeah, kind of sit back and just flow with it. Definitely.
Well, like today. Today's a prime example. I haven't listened to any of my astrology dudes like I normally do in the morning. I have no idea. I do know some planets are changing signs today, and it's kind of weird, but I don't know what the actual forecast for the day is. But I do know that I was abruptly woken up at 1:50 this morning. I stepped in piss, had to clean it up, then overslept an hour to work. And like, so when I wake up and it's 3 minutes till I'm supposed to leave to be here on time, I have a decision right then and there. I can panic and run out the door and have a bad mood all day and try to get out here. Or I can accept the fact that I overslept, reach out to Alex and Eric and let them know. And you know, my biggest fear in letting them know is that they're going to tell me that I can't come out here. Okay, well, what happens if they tell me I can't come out here? I'm okay either way, you know what I mean? Like, and honestly, my only big fear about it this morning was if they were going to fire me, I would be over halfway here when they did fire me. You know what I mean? And I was like, well, what am I going to do if I'm already out there and they fire me? And I was like, well, I'm just going to finish the day. Aww. I like the company. I like the product. And so at that moment, if I'm prepared with that, well, I don't have any pressure now. It's not a bad day. It's an off day. It's a weird day. Some shit's happening that doesn't normally happen, but I don't have to carry that through the rest of my fucking day because I can very quickly navigate through what the worst and best possible situations are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It does take a little bit of time sitting there, you know.
Oh, that program could not work for me. No, like we're all different. Like, that program would drive me insane. Yeah. Like, it would make me feel, like, anxious to be thinking, like, well, if they're going to fire me, like, I could not, like, that could not be my first source to come to. It would be more like, well, I better let them know and just go ahead and head on out there. You know, like, I have to keep myself in, like, a different state because if I think the worst, then the worst is going to happen. It's just, I'm, like, a master manifester. So I have to always keep, like, my mind more directed at a positive angle, and then if something negative happens, well, I'll just fucking flow with it.
Totally, I get that. I'm a pretty good manifester too. I always feel weird talking about manifestation because it feels like talking about ego, and it feels real like I am this when that's not the case at all. I just ask for some things and they show up every once in a while, you know.
Right.
But for me, because my anxiety, which is a big part of my deal is, you know, I'm 100% disabled for anxiety and depression.
Right.
And since my anxiety is so bad, one of the things I've learned through microdosing and meditation is if I can work my way through the worst case scenario, well, then there's nothing to worry about.
Okay.
Once I've established, okay, Alex fires me. What's the next move?
Right.
Well, then I don't have to worry if Alex fires me or not. Anything above that is going to be easy to handle because we've already figured out a solution for the worst case problem.
Gotcha.
That's kind of how I approach it. Does it always work? Absolutely fucking not. But
right.
I have a lot better results with that than I did with medication with trying to just ignore it or counting to 10 and holding my breath or any of that other stuff that they taught me. You know, this is what I found that works best for me.
Yeah, for sure. Braden, are you reading any books?
Not right now, no.
Not right now?
I haven't really read a whole lot since I've been out of rehab.
Yeah? Did you read anything in rehab?
Mostly just history stuff.
Mostly history stuff. Is that what you're more into, is like history stuff?
I mean, that science. I mean,
I love history and science. Like, in high school, my teachers were never mean to me in history or science because I fucking paid attention. Yeah, and the history was like, just because I wanted to hear their bullshit. Because I've always felt different about what history was versus what they told you.
No, I'm fascinated by war.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's your sign?
Aquarius.
You're an Aquarius and you're fascinated with war? What is it that fascinates you about the war?
It's just like the camaraderie about it.
Oh, okay.
Camaraderie about it.
In a sense, like, you can't say the people you served with aren't more like family than your own family, in a sense. That's how I would feel.
So, right.
Because I don't really, me and my family don't click.
Right. Oh, so you're more talking like the brotherhood that comes out of it.
Right.
Okay.
I can get down with that.
Yeah. No, and you know what's so crazy is that I see that too. I see that like when I watch like movies like Forrest Gump. That camaraderie, that brotherhood, that, that would be fascinating to have.
That's my favorite part about the military.
Yeah, especially like when, maybe that's kind of something that you like or longed for, right. Like was the brotherhood,
Not really. I mean, if I die, I want to die in battle. and I don't want to just get
okay, home. Lieutenant Dan. You're coming, getting on my back. Let's go.
Leonidas over here.
Hey, bro, I think Spartans are the shit.
Leroy Jenkins!
It's like World of Warcraft, bro.
Oh, man.
I kicked your ass out of that fucking raid party after that, too.
I've never played that in my life, but that was when I was in the army. That was one of our platoon mottos when they called us to attention. And we would talk about Catalina wine mixers, and we had a good old time. A lot of Will Ferrell fans in the army.
Oh, the fucking Catalina wine mixer.
No, but my favorite, I know the camaraderie you're talking about. That's my favorite thing about being overseas is you don't have to question who has your back. You know that you have each other's backs. Doesn't matter color, race, gender, religion, none of that shit fucking matters. Your unit, you protect each other. And the second best thing is, unlike in the civilian world, everybody wears their rank on their chest. And there's no confusion about where you stand in society, where you operate in society. Everyone has a job that they do. You know what I mean? Like, there's none of this, you know, I'm going to come over here and stand over you even though I work in accounting and tell you a safety procedure you're not doing. You know, like, that don't happen in the Army. If you're a mechanic, you mechanic. If you're this, you're this.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been in this long, you have a rank, and you're this person. If not, you have this rank, and you're this person. You know, there's no question. You know what I mean?
Ugh, that makes me sick to think about, too. That makes me sick because it's like, then you don't question. You're not allowed to question them.
Well, that's the whole idea they want.
Well, right, but I'm just saying, like, that's what makes me sick about the whole situation. Yeah. Is because in society, that's what the government kind of expects you to do, is don't fucking question me. You know? And so it's kind of like, that's where it falls back. Military, same way. Don't question me, just do as I say.
They want you to feel captive to your superiors. It's psychological warfare they do. I mean, honestly, this may make me sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I think that there are occultists that work in the military, and then they do that shit on purpose. They tell you shit when you're in basic training. From the first time you get there, they say shit to you like, don't walk with your hands behind your back. You're not a criminal or a prisoner. Never have your hands behind your back. You're a free man in America. But the second you've got to talk to a superior, they tell you to lock it up and put your hands behind your back. And there's a lot of mixed subliminal imagery going on there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm going to tell you, you're this free thing, but when you interact with me, you better behave this way. You know,
and it
just kind of, you don't think about it because there's so much other shit. And I definitely didn't think about it till years after the military.
Yeah.
And after reading books and really studying hermetics and other, I have a love for all things occult. Like, if it's a history that's hard to find, I want to know it. You know, I want to find the forgotten stories and, I don't know, that's just my gig. I like it. I loved history before I loved spirituality. That's how I ended up, you know, chasing this down. And then once I fucking read my first philosophy book, dude, it was on. I couldn't stop. Like, once I found Alan Watts, and then it was, you know, I started reading, like, The Art of War. I always say it wrong because I'm an American. I want to say Tao, and it's actually like Dao. But, man, I just fucking got into some shit there.
Yeah.
Dived way off in.
Brayden, what's your favorite time period?
I'm a Wild West, huh?
No, definitely not.
Fuck that.
I kind of thought with the cow talk all week that you were going to be a Wild West cowboy guy, to be honest with you.
Not
if I'd
Miss
go,
Reed?
I'd go
Miss
hundreds
Reed?
Of years before that, like Plains Indians.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
More OG way.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I misread. I'll own that.
So what is your favorite?
I don't know. I like all the Roman and Slavic wars. That shit's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Or like the shit that's been going on for thousands of years between Japan and China and the Mongolians, how it's just one big old clusterfuck and they all hate each other.
Isn't that weird? Isn't it?
Yeah, it makes sense.
What's the point in it? Where is the logic behind the war?
Greed.
Yeah. Is greed one of the seven deadly sins?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You see, like, that's kind of like one of the teachings. Like, that's kind of like been a teaching forever. You know, those kinds of things are only lead to what? Like, destruction and chaos. You said what?
I said, yeah, and that's bad because I love money.
You can still love money, but take the emotion out of it. Take the attachment.
Yeah,
like,
but
the emotion's attached to money.
I'm a get real mad.
But look, let me tell you this too. When you get real mad, what's that gonna? Do you think that person's gonna pay you?
No, I know that person's not going to pay me. That's why I'm real, real mad and I want to punch somebody. Because right. I want them to feel the pain that I'm feeling now that I feel betrayed.
Right.
I'm not much of a physical, violent person because, I seen a lot of that when I was younger. But
right.
I don't think twice whenever I need to. Like, if I ain't got a choice, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. You ain't going to get me. But like,
you don't think that you can talk your way out of it? Like, you don't think that you have enough of a say? To be able to say enough to get...
Depend on the individual. Depend on the individual.
Yeah. Okay.
For sure, on that one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'd say I like Egypt.
Yeah.
My favorite
time. I just want to get a glimpse. Just take me back.
I want to go. That's one of my goals this year is I'm going to get a passport so that I can... I'm not going to try to go to Egypt this year, but I'm going to get a passport so I can go.
Yeah.
I want to get triggered out. And I want to go to India real bad, too.
That would be pretty cool.
I feel a calling to go there.
I have some on my Hood Hippie Facebook platform. I have a few of my Facebook followers and friends that are from India. And I talk to them often. And I have one fellow that was telling me, America is just... said something like, oh, yeah, your country's that way because America's lying about what they're doing. And I am thinking, well, what do you know that I don't? Because they're lying about everything that they do. So what is it, though? Like, if you know something specific, and he's like, I'm at work, I can't talk, and you know. So I wonder, what's he talking about? Is there something I don't know about? Or I know nothing.
Of course there's something you don't know about.
I know nothing.
So yeah.
I know shit about fuck, right?
Right.
You could be talking about so many different things.
Yeah, there's like...
Yes.
Spectrum on that was pretty broad.
Like, what exactly, sir? I can give you a few that I know on my own.
I do think there's something to be said about the military being the cheapest workforce on the planet.
Is
I think
it?
The military gets sent up. Oh, yes, for sure.
Yeah, they get paid dick.
Everybody thinks we get paid real well because we don't have to pay taxes, but like, I spent a year in Iraq and I made $36,000 tax free. There's a whole lot of people here in America that made more money than that.
You made $36,000?
Yeah. That's how much I got paid that year. And granted, at the time, it was the best money I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, right.
But when you get home and you're a veteran and people start talking to you, everyone just assumes that because you were in the military that you got paid big bucks. There are some people in the military that make big bucks, but it ain't the fucking Joes fighting the war.
Oh, isn't that sad? Yeah. That fucking...
It's just how the pay scale works. And even then, it don't ever get real, real high. Ain't nobody in the military making $100,000 a year. Maybe officers, I don't know. Ain't no enlisted people making that. Sure and the fuck ain't making quarterback money. I always have to struggle. People, it's a weird, it's a patriotism is ingrained in people in this country, and I'm not anti-America by any means. I fucking love it. I have a flag flying in front of my house. But when people bring me their kids and are like, my kid's going to join such and such branch in the military. Aren't you proud? I'm like, sure. Good. I hope you pick the Air Force.
Yeah.
What I really want to say is, run the other fucking way!
Yeah.
They got enough already.
Jacob, what would you do if your son wanted to join the military?
I mean, I want to say that I'd support him, but I mean, I'd probably also do my best to talk him out of it.
Seed the mind a little to stir him to another direction.
Probably ask him what his motivation was, you know, and try to go from there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's people that join it and love it for what I assume are good reasons, but I know there's a lot of people that join it out of feeling like they don't have a lot of choices, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that'd probably be where I'd start, you know? I'm not, like, anti-military at all, but, like, do I want my son spending his life fighting some bullshit-ass war for the country we currently live in? Not really.
Bingo. I'm right there with you. My son wanted to be a Navy SEAL, and it terrifies me. I'm like, you know, there's so many other things, you know, that you're worthy of doing. Like, find your passion. I don't think it's really that. I think you just play Call of Fucking Duty too much and have an idea of what you think the military is, and it's not.
Right.
Well, the TV shows and all the shit they watch on TV, that don't help, man.
Yeah, it's it literally is propaganda.
Yeah,
you know, the first time I had someone really frame to me that, like, these war movies that get put out, they are literal, it's American propaganda,
well,
you know,
us. And so, you know, all this shit they made over the last few years about the kneeling and the protest at the national, singing all that shit at the NFL. Well, like, let's be real. The Army pays the NFL to put that production on to drive up enlistment. That every sporting event you go to, that giant flag, those fireworks, the something-something flies over, you have that beautiful moment, that's paid for out of the recruiting budget of the United States Defense.
Wow.
So that little boys and little girls standing in there go, ooh, I want to grow up and be a pilot. I want to grow up and be a soldier. That's real talk. I'm not making it up. You can look it up. It's all free, open knowledge online. You know? That's where they started doing that. That's where that stuff comes from. You know? That's why we started saying the Pledge of Allegiance in school every day. All that kind of shit.
The big corporation.
And so, like, here's my deal. I understand that there are people you're not going to be able to talk out of it. I was one of them. I got on 9/11. I already wanted to join the military. I already felt like it was my best option. And then when 9/11 went down, and you can harbor whatever opinions you want about whether it was terrorist or not, I got wrapped up in that.
Right.
And as soon as I was able to join the military, I did. And I wanted to go fight this war. And I got to Iraq, and it didn't have shit to do with 9/11.
What did it have shit to do with?
As far as I could tell, one president pissed off that his daddy got embarrassed.
Oh, okay.
Like, I mean,
I like hearing the opinions. I don't know. I don't fucking know. I'm just.
I mean, like.
I like hearing your output.
I'm not. I don't know. Like, I saw them drilling. I saw people drilling for oil over there, but I don't know what was military, what was U.S. civilians, what was other countries. I don't know the answers to those questions. But I do know not one motherfucker in that jail I worked in had anything to fucking do with Al Qaeda. Not one motherfucker in there had anything to do with what happened on that day.
When did you start to form a different opinion on the reason you were over there while you were there? Like, when did that other opinion form? How long were you there when it hit you?
I can't tell you because you're recording and I don't think enough time's passed, but there was a gentleman there.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't have any charges against him. We picked him up in Turkey, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't headed to Iraq. He was headed somewhere else when we arrested him. And he had been in detainment in Iraq for a number of years. And may still be, I don't know. But he didn't have any charges against him. And I'd heard that. And you hear all kinds of weird things when you're working in the detention centers. Half of it's made up shit. Some of it's real.
Right.
It's a strange place, you know. You can't believe everything you hear, but I got the, I think it's a privilege. He's a neat guy. I liked meeting him. I got the privilege to hang out with this guy, and I took him to some of his, I took a lot of people to the meetings with their attorneys, because, you know, they're all prisoners of war.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's attorney meetings were different. This guy's attorney meetings, they brought a cell phone, and they let him call his family, and they brought pictures of his kids. Because he didn't have any charges against him. He was just related to a guy that he didn't even like. And America was afraid of who he was related to, so we kept him locked up. And that's when I started going, what are we doing here? What's really happening?
Yeah.
This dude I'm talking to, and fuck, maybe he got in my head, maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe he really did feel the way that his family members do, and he tricked me. All possibilities are open, but that dude talked the same way we talk. He had the same feelings about freedom that we have. He just happened to be related to the wrong guy.
Hmm. I see.
You know what I mean? And by the time I got over there, you know, it was, I was over there in 08. So it was a long time. Saddam was already dead at this point. You know what I mean? Like, Obama was just taking office. We knew damn well that Al-Qaeda was in Afghanistan, not Iraq. You know?
Yeah. That's a lot of confusion.
Yeah, it was.
Favorite podcast right now, guys?
Know Thyself.
Know Thyself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's honestly, that's mine too.
Know Thyself, that's probably that one, and That's Why We Drink are the two that I listen to the most.
I want to humble brag and let you know I introduced Alex to Know Thyself.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
Nice humble brag.
It's my humble brag. Yeah, no. I was so excited when I started seeing him post it, because he has way more followers than me, and I was like, yeah, spread that knowledge! Spread that knowledge! I like them a lot. I like the way they present the information. I like it. I like on their Patreon page the best. They got some videos on there. It's on like five.
Patreon.
Whatever. Patreon, Patron.
Hey, we're taking shots around here.
Whoop, whoop.
Get ya, kill ya.
He's got a couple videos on there with some alchemical mandalas, and where he's like walking you through what each symbol means, why they're set up the way they are, why they look the way they are. And like, I've read that stuff in books before, mm-hmm. but it really, tied the knot for me to see somebody go over it visually with the pointer and explain it to me, even though I had read it. Because, you know, I got a whole bunch of information that rattled around in my brain that I think is right and correct.
Uh-huh.
But I still, feels really good to me when someone else comes along and validates that information. Especially someone that I feel trust towards. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Braden, what about you?
Shit, the only podcast I know is Joe Rogan.
Yeah, well, is that your one you listen to often?
No.
Nope?
You're not a podcaster?
Not very much. The only time I really listen to podcasts is when I just get really high and just lay in bed.
Oh. Well. Cool. But you can listen to mine if you want to. I'll send you the link.
It's pretty good.
I'll give it a listen.
Give it a whirl. It'll teach you a little bit about ayahuasca. You know, we were talking about you trying the journeys, yesterday. Coming to ceremonies. That would be super cool.
I'm curious about it, that's for sure.
It's definitely, in my opinion, very needed, very helpful. I think being mindful with using anything that can alter your state of mind is very powerful, too.
You ever done ayahuasca, Jacob?
I have not. So that's another thing that I have been offered, not right in front of me. Mm-hmm. My mom actually went and did ayahuasca, like, in the jungle and shit, like, years ago. Yeah, yeah, like,
wow.
My mom's the shit. She's been to, like, India. She used to, like, help teach oneness and shit like that. So, like, my mom... Man,
so you
she,
come from good stock?
Well, I mean, it took... Like, that's not the mom I grew up with. For sure. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a journey for her, you know? Like,
yeah.
The mom I grew up with, we were going to...
I'm not the guy I was 6 months ago.
Yeah, we were going to church every Saturday, you know? But, yeah. Anyway, so she, at one point in my 20s, when I was, you know, just fucking off and didn't have a lot of direction in life, things weren't going well, she offered. She's like, you know, if you want to go do it, you can. But, you know, at the time, I definitely wasn't ready, you know, to get my shit together. So mm-hmm. I didn't take her up on it. And definitely have done a fair share of research on it, but... you know, I've been through, not to say I don't need it, that's not what I'm saying, but I've definitely been through my journey as far as like just working on myself and all that, and it's a forever process, but I don't feel like I need ayahuasca to face anything that I'm currently, you know, aware of or bothering me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like ayahuasca is something that isn't, from what I hear, isn't done for... the enjoyment of the experience as much as what you can gain and face, you know, mm-hmm. out of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just not really, haven't been at a point, you know, since then I felt like that was necessary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I would love to be enlightened if I got some misconceptions.
No, that's good. No, there was a lot of trauma and stuff that I had not faced. Like I said, we talked earlier, I'm very secretive with myself, sure. Not just with others, but yeah. Obviously with myself, about the pain that I've experienced, the trauma. And so I guess for me, it gave me a way to sit and observe it and face it without judgment, and to like to have it explained to me, like, you were running through this program of how you thought. So, of course, you were going to make these decisions. Like, it was, for me, a way to be my own alchemist, you know? Like, I had already started that process of the transition because of the calling, but I was still half-ass, half-in, half-out on right. healing.
Right.
And I needed the ayahuasca to kind of hold my hand and, like, mother womb me
mm-hmm.
into the understanding of why I acted and reacted the way I did, with like nothing but pure fucking love, like being able to love the situations to death and love myself to death and those issues, so they're no longer something that hurt me or phase me in that way, rather just a tool or a key to learn from.
Right,
because I could have not done that. I say I couldn't have. I was choosing not to do that on my own. I needed, in my opinion, the ayahuasca to walk me through it.
For sure. No, that makes sense, man. As I hear you say that, what I would say my equivalent was is like I told you, like I've been to rehab
mm-hmm.
and I intentionally made myself go for 90 days because I had spent my whole life building these behaviors. A month vacation wasn't going to change that shit, you know? And I even left Oklahoma with the thinking of, like, shit, who knows if I'll ever come back, you know? Like, I was leaving to get the fuck away and change my life. And so whenever I got there, I was pretty ready. You know what I mean? Like, I beat myself down enough that I was like, no, like, I need this shit.
Mm.
So whenever I got there, like, I was just already in that space of, like, all right, I'm no longer too cool for shit. Like, if they tell me, like, they're like, yo, you should try yoga. I'm like, cool, I'm doing yoga now. And they're like, hey, this is going to teach you to meditate. And you're going to meditate every day. Cool, I meditate every day now. You know, and they're like, you should try this, you should try that. And then just... I got over myself, at least in that time period, because they tell you, like, in recovery, your ideas got you here, you know what I mean? So, like, get okay with the fact that, like, you don't know, you know what I mean? We're giving you some suggestions, and like that's what I needed in that time. Like, you know? So I just got comfortable, and just going through that program, you do a lot of, like we were talking about with hermetics, like you do a lot of the same shit that, like it, that's not isolated to 12-step recovery, right? Like you getting right with yourself is not something only done in recovery. You know, the recovery just helps addicts do that shit.
Well, and what I think the recovery does is it puts a place where you can go and talk a certain way. Because so totally, we're having conversations about hermetics and all these kinds of things. But I can't say to Braden, if you don't do this, you're going to fucking die. Yeah. And it being acceptable in this conversation.
Right.
In AA or in NA, you can say to somebody, hey, dude, you're fucking up your life. Do these 12 things or you're going to die. And everyone in the room goes, he's right. You better do them.
Keep coming back.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's a different, it's the intention of the room. Everyone's there to do the same thing. And, like, that's, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, in and out of it for, like, 10 years. Yeah. And I fucking love it. And I'm here to tell you that it works. But I'm not an alcoholic.
It works if you work.
I'm not an alcoholic. But if you do those 12 things, you will have a spiritual awakening. Now, a whole bunch of motherfuckers around here think that when they have a spiritual awakening, they're going to start levitating and everything's going to get brighter and being high def, and that ain't how the fuck it works. But if you do those 12 things honestly and thoroughly, you will have a complete outlook in thought, action, and motive. Like, everything will change. The way you think, the way you feel, and what you do will change. And it will never be the same. Right. You will always have this thing in your head that checks your motives. And checks what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know? I know a lot. I know a lot of people that aren't in AA anymore, and I joke with them, even though they may not be an alcoholic, I'm like, yeah, but I bet you count your drinks different than everybody else at the bar.
Right.
Because people that hadn't been in recovery aren't counting their fucking drinks at the bar.
That moderation discipline coming back.
You know what I mean? They don't think about that thing because it's never been a problem to them. It's never been hounded in on them. They definitely think about, am I tipsy? Should I drive? But not, I've been here 2 hours and I've had 3 drinks. What's everyone else had?
Well, I think, like you're saying, like before I ever got clean and tried to do that with my life, I never had any awareness around trying to moderate my use of anything. You know, like as far as my awareness went was, I don't like the way I feel, and I'm going to change that. And so, you definitely, you know, going through that process, you're going to naturally cultivate some awareness around, like, how you feel whenever you're doing those things, you know? And, I certainly can't. Like, Xanax was my big thing, man, before I went in.
Yeah.
And, like, there's no way that I could go on the type of bender, spend the type of energy and time that I used to spend on that. But that's for a variety of reasons, but partially just because, you know, like waking up, you know, you're only going to fall so far typically because you're like, hopefully you catch yourself and you're like, I want to get back to that.
That's kind of, I've heard a lot of people talk the way that you just talked about, hallucinogenics, and I don't want to sound like I'm not getting lessons because I definitely get downloads and information from doing psychedelic experiences, but very rarely, there have been some instances where I have intentionally used psychedelics to process an event. My divorce was one. I still talk about it because it's really the biggest thing other than Corona that's happened in my life in the last few years. I sat down with 3 grams of mushrooms and wrote hate letters to women and thought about how brokenhearted I was. And then, you know, it was quote unquote a horrible trip, but when it was over, I didn't have a hatred for my ex-wife. I didn't think about her every day. You know, like those things went away.
Yeah.
But generally, I use psychedelics to be reminded and shown a bliss that I know if I work hard enough, I'll be able to achieve without it. If I do the things in hermetics and meditate and continue to do the work long enough, I'll be able to achieve that bliss without the psychedelic. You know? And so,
Yeah.
I'm not saying that one way is right and one way is wrong, but it's only been the last few months that I've heard someone talk about it the way you're talking about it and doing it the way you're doing it. And I wonder how much that had to do with my journey, because my journey with ayahuasca, did I feel different when it was over? Yes, but I don't have this big grandiose story to tell you about how the mother came and talked to me or any of that stuff. Like, I had a headache. My tummy hurt.
Yeah.
I laid there. Uh-huh. I meditated.
So basically, you just weren't aware of the conversations you and Mama had, because
figured a change inside of me. And, you know, and I will say, like, I think the best thing I did, and I'm not a fucking shaman, I'm not here to give you medicine advice, talk to your people.
I
went and talked to my people,
uh-huh.
and I said, hey, here's what I did. One, I didn't stick to Dianta very well. I was not prepared for this.
Uh-huh.
Two, this is what I've been experiencing all weekend.
Yeah.
And then I said, three, this is the medicine, which psilocybin is my preferred plant medicine that I journey with and I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think it would be okay if I took mushrooms tonight and ask them to translate what I was supposed to learn here this weekend? And then, like,
then you understood it, so you have a really good
communication. I had like a me and the mushroom had like a talk, like I've talked to the mushroom like that before, but like that was the most intense me and the mushroom have ever talked. That was like the most me and the mushroom talked about an idea until there was nothing else to talk about the idea, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, went so thorough into ideas, I can't even pull it forward right now, but I can see the math we did in the air.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
That makes so much sense to me with the mushrooms and the math.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can see the symbolism that was drew. And honestly, I've been, I got the Almanac Encyclopedia, and I've been trying to get some other books. I've been circling for this. I saw this, I'm saying sacred geometry because I don't know the answer yet, but I saw this wheel with symbols on it and the way it was designed, and I know that I've seen it somewhere before. And I'm gonna figure out where it's from. And I've been trying to figure out since I left that circle that day. Like, I want to know where that wheel is from and what those symbols mean.
Have you created it?
No, I have not.
Create it.
I can't even see all of it anymore, to be honest with you.
So create what you can remember. Yeah. Do it so you can fucking figure it out. It's some kind of relevance, you know? For sure. I know I always give that advice to do that shit because I don't do it. And I'm like, someone do it, please, so I can see what it looks like.
I love every time I go to a spiritual thing and I ask them, I'm like, hey, I've been experiencing this. I think it might be a gift. Can you help me work it? They always tell me the same thing. Like, have you been journaling? And I'm like, I haven't written since 8th fucking grade. Leave me alone. What's next?
Yeah, what can I do besides that? But no, like, that's
like,
the
it's
key.
Not, yeah.
That's the key. That's the tool. That's the method to help.
There's magic between the pen and the paper. I did learn that in AA, but I always struggled with it even in recovery. Like, I had to do it a bunch of times for those steps, but it was always like, I'd be working on my 4th step for 6 months, and the dude would be like, hey, you're coming over to my house on Sunday to do your 5th step. Well, I'd sit down that morning and knock the motherfucker out. You know what I mean? Or sit down for the 24 hours prior. Like, the sitting down for me is the hard part. Once I sit down, it'll pour out. I just gotta dedicate the time and the space.
Yeah.
Every time it'll pour out. That's why I don't like writing. Because every time I write till my hand hurts.
Yeah. There's a lesson in that, right?
I know you ain't figured it out yet.
Don't worry yourself out. Or you won't be, or won't be fun no more.
Yeah, or maybe if I did it more often,
hand wouldn't hurt. Yeah, it's like working out, right?
Yeah. Maybe if I didn't only do it in time of crises.
Right. Yeah. You made it part of like a daily practice or a daily ritual.
Yeah.
Just to write like a few things down. I always say I'm gonna do stuff like that, and then I fucking record instead.
That's a big part of it, too. Like, I have a love for finding knowledge. And so, a lot of times when I have free time and I could go journal and I could dedicate that time, I end up grabbing a different book and reading a whole bunch of practices that don't end up applied. I mean, like, I've absorbed some of it, and so obviously some of it gets applied to my life, but
yeah,
there's so much more in depth that I could go, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I have a pretty good practice with Lilith, and I talk to her pretty often, but, like, I ain't did half the shit it says in those ceremonial magic books.
Yeah. Do you have any deities that you use, Jacob?
No, ma'am.
No?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. No. Is Lilith your only one?
She's... I have an angel I talk to regularly.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, I talk to her regularly, and then I talk to Lilith. I'm really into Merlin right now, and I've really been into Thoth for a long time, but I don't have any. Lilith is the only one I have an altar set up to.
Gotcha, gotcha.
I didn't know it was an altar when I was setting it up, but
The best altars, because that's intuition, Ran.
It's a living altar. It's made out of plants and fish.
Perfect.
It's fucking beautiful. Some books. Nice times.
Well, thank you all so much for hanging out. I'm done.